Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
Kind of hard for me to believe it's week number four of this series. It always surprises me when I finish a series. It's, man, I was just getting started. What's the deal here? How many people heard the first three talks, either being here or online? Quite a few of you. That's great. Getting something out of it? Is it working? See where we're going on this? I hope so. Over the last 10,000 or so years that we human beings have been building a civilization and occasionally trying to destroy it, which we do, or try to do anyway, there have always been people that we have looked up to. There have been political leaders and military leaders and business leaders and religious leaders like Pope Francis, pretty cool guy, I think, seems to be right now. Explorers, inventors, and people pushing for social change. In fact, all of those people are the way that the world has always changed. Either one person or a small group of people had a better vision of the world than the one that existed at the time, and they kept moving forward until their vision became a reality. That's how change happens. Now, there have been a lot of problems solved over the years, but there have also been a lot of new problems showed up as a result of the solution of the old problems, okay? But fortunately, whenever humanity found itself in need of guidance, leadership, or plain old good sense, the right person or the right people always seemed to show up just at the right time. Now, we didn't always listen to them, at least not at first, but they were there simply being clear, telling the truth, and coming from a place of love and compassion. They didn't have to announce themselves, ta-da, here I am, okay? When they showed up, we knew who they were. It was very, very obvious. We could tell by their wisdom. We could tell by their presence. We could tell by their ability to get things done. And these people are the ones we call the enlightened ones. These people were the ones who understood the spiritual truth that we're all connected and we're all the same at the spiritual level. Now, sometimes these people were already known, very well known in many cases, but at some point they seemed to evolve into these enlightened teachers when the world was confronted with some major challenge that required their wisdom and their strength. Think Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War or Winston Churchill during World War II. Other times these people were anonymous but spiritually grounded beings who were simply minding their own business, keeping out of the spotlight, or at least trying to, until one day they were either dragged or pushed onto the world stage. Think Gandhi, for example, Dr. King. Nobody knew where they came from initially, but there they were when we needed them. The truth is, more often than we realize, most spiritually evolved people do not show up walking on water, wearing a halo, glowing with an ungodly light, all right? They look like ordinary people, just going about their business every day in small ways that the world, at first at least, may not even notice. That's why Mother Teresa, who is definitely on this list, said, "In this life, we cannot do great things. We can only do small things with great love." With great love. It's a great statement, but this isn't true about just certain people. It's true about us all. That's why it's important for us to realize that these people we're talking about are not just people just like you and me. They are you and me, and you and I are them, all right? Because we all have the spiritual potential to wake up, as the Buddha told us, to wake up to the spiritual truth about ourselves and the spiritual truth about the world whenever we want, whenever we decide to. All we have to do to become like these people is to practice living the way an honest, intelligent, open-minded, non-judgmental, and unconditionally loving person would live. And fortunately, that's not nearly as hard as a lot of people think. And I say fortunately because when we do this, when we figure out that we can do this, not only does the world get better, our life does too. So, what I've been talking about, what we've been talking about these last few weeks, are things that we can do to start living this way right now. And I settled on four characteristics for us to focus on. Clarity, week one, integrity, compassion, that was last week, and faith today. And I was thinking this week, something interesting about these qualities is they are all completely invisible and internal, all right? It doesn't take any money to buy them. Anybody can expand in any one of these four areas, and a surgeon couldn't cut somebody open and say, oh, here's compassion, or here's integrity. So they only exist on an invisible spiritual level. So these four things, let's talk about them very briefly, one at a time, just to get us all on the same page. Clarity, first of all, means that we need to open our spiritual eyes, or our third eye, the Hindus used to call it, or the chakras, and see that not only are we connected to every other person in the world today, we are also connected to every other person who ever lived and every person who ever will live. All right? And we're also connected to life in every other way that it shows up in this incredibly diverse universe, including nature and all the other ways. And once we accept this idea, our path becomes very obvious. It becomes very clear. That's clarity. Now, integrity means that we know the truth, we accept the truth, and we live the truth, and that we never lie to ourselves or about ourselves. Integrity is when we finally realize that we are all individual expressions of God and that whenever we try to deny that truth, we get into trouble. That's integrity. Now, compassion, last week, is important because it keeps us from becoming either too obsessed or too impressed with either our clarity of purpose or our personal divinity, all right, as opposed to our shared divinity, which is much more important. Compassion allows us to focus on giving instead of receiving, on being love instead of getting loved. Practicing compassion creates balance in our life because it constantly reminds us that we are all one and we're all in this together. So that leaves us with faith. And I saved this one for the last, not just because it brings all the others together, but because faith is one of those words that has a very specific meaning in the traditional religions that most of us grew up with us. And to some of us, the meaning that we learned was not an exceptionally good one. We have to admit that. You see, most of us were taught things like faith is, what was the Bible quote, the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. Anybody hear that or get taught that when you were growing up? Sure. I remember reading that the first time and going, what the hell does that mean? I had no idea, you know? In other words, we have been taught in the past to have faith in things that don't make sense and that no one can explain. That's certainly what I learned in Catholic school. Faith, we were told, is the only acceptable answer to the so-called mysteries of life. And this old, outdated point of view encourages us to believe in things that we hope will happen, even though we know way down deep inside that the only way they can possibly happen is if God feels sorry for us and makes an exception in our own individual case. Okay? So mentally speaking and spiritually speaking, in the old way of thinking, faith was a last resort. Well, can't explain it, can't understand it, don't like it, have faith. That was the answer. But today, I want to change that way of thinking, because faith is actually a powerful and necessary component in our ability to grow spiritually, okay? All these enlightened people we're talking about, the enlightened teachers, so to speak, had great faith. Not necessarily in their own religions, because they cover the whole spectrum of religions. Not necessarily in their own personality, because they were all humble people. But in the power and the presence of life that they could feel being expressed through them as the one source of all life being expressed individually. So they didn't have blind faith in something that someone else taught them or something that they read. Instead, they had faith in their own inner convictions, their own inner integrity, call it that, about what they heard, what they read, what they thought, what they felt, and what they saw. Or another way of saying it is, instead of having faith in God, they had the faith of God. See the difference? Very, very different. That means at the deepest level of their inner being, they knew what they knew about life and about God, and they knew that they knew it. That's really what it meant. They knew what they knew, and they knew that they knew it. That's why, personally, instead of the word faith, which has all these weird religious connotations, I like to use the word belief. All right? Even though these two words, faith and belief, are used interchangeably sometimes, faith has kind of a religious connotation, while belief, to me, is something much more practical. But if I use the word belief as it applies to my spiritual path, I have to make sure that I'm using it strongly and clearly enough to define those things that I believe in completely. Because if you think about it, there are different levels of belief. And I sometimes don't know how firmly I believe in something until my faith is tested. And when I say tested, I don't mean tested by God, I mean tested by me. Now, in a way, faith is its own test. The Christian writer C.S. Lewis, he wrote The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and that most of you are familiar with him, he had a great statement once. He said, "You never know how much you really believe anything until its truth or falsehood becomes a matter of life or death." And then he says, "It's easy to say you believe a rope is strong as long as you're merely using it to tie up a box. But suppose you had to hang by that rope over a precipice, okay? Wouldn't you then first discover how strong your faith in the rope really was?" All right? Different thing. So I guess what we need to ask ourselves here is whether or not we think that our belief in the unity of all life and our belief in our oneness with God, whether this is a matter of life or death. That's what we have to decide, okay? How important is it for us to know what we believe spiritually and to believe very strongly in what we believe? And is this just about our spiritual beliefs, or does it go further than that? Does it go into our day-to-day life? Dr. Holmes sums it up pretty well in The Science of Mind. I could use Angela's leather-bound copy, but I won't because I wrote it down. He has a chapter entitled Faith. It's very interesting to read. And he says, "The idea that faith has only to do with our religious experience is a mistake. Faith is a faculty of mind that finds its highest expression in the religious attitude, but always the person who has faith in their own ability accomplishes far more than the one who has no confidence in themselves." And then he says, "Those who have great faith have great power." Have great power. Now, he's not talking here about worldly power or power over other people. He's talking about power over ourselves, power over ourselves, or more specifically, power over our doubts, over our fears, and over the decisions we make. That's the kind of power that we need to learn how to use, especially when we find ourselves caught up in a situation that tries to drag us off into the normal everyday world of drama, confusion, and negativity. All right. Has anyone here ever spent time in the world of drama, confusion, and negativity? All right. Now, we've all spent some time there, but we never have to go back. We never have to go back. But if we do find ourselves being drawn back to that state of mind, drama, confusion, negativity, if we keep feeling ourselves getting dragged back into it, it's only because we don't have something strong to hold on to. That's the only way we can be dragged, okay? You see, we can only get dragged into the mud if we believe at some level that we belong in the mud. That's the only way you can get pulled. That's where faith comes in. A firm belief in the basic spiritual nature of all life, which includes us, because we're part of life, is the only thing that can keep us grounded, firmly grounded, so that we can stand in the world, metaphysically speaking, stand where we are instead of standing where someone else tells us that we're supposed to stand. That's the power that the faith of God, as we understand God, gives us. But the most important reason we need to examine the strength of our beliefs is because our beliefs are creative. Our beliefs are actually creative. And by that I mean our beliefs are active, they're not passive. Whatever we have faith in, whatever we truly believe in, is going to show up in our life. It is going to show up in our life. That's one of the cornerstones of this teaching. And I assure you, this is not just an abstract metaphysical concept, okay? This is not just a chicken or the egg thing. Gosh, do I believe in my problem because it's there, or is it there because I believe in it? Some people get bogged down in that kind of stuff. This is not one of those Buddhist riddles, a cone, what is the sound of one hand clapping, all right? The answer we're talking about here has been given to us over and over and over again for at least 5,000 years. Probably before that, but at least that long. This idea that our faith or our belief sets the creative process in motion has been understood and demonstrated by countless creative, successful, and enlightened people throughout history. They don't have to teach it. They have demonstrated it. Many of these people also, by the way, were living in a world that tried very hard to crush their beliefs. But over the centuries, look at all of it. Look at the rise of Christianity or any of the religions, people of faith. You look at the civil rights movement, all of these things. Over the centuries, it became pretty obvious how things worked. Every time a new and greater belief met a limited idea about the world, okay, even if the old idea had been around for centuries, the new belief always won out. Eventually, it always went out. Now, the teacher may not have survived, but their ideas did. Don't confuse the two. I mean, look at Socrates, Jesus, Gandhi, Martin Luther King. You know, these we all know of being killed for their beliefs, and lots of other men and women who died for their beliefs and never made it into the history books. These people were killed not because of who they were personally, but because of the power of their beliefs. If you look at their histories, none of them carried guns. None of them used violence, all right? They didn't lead huge armies, yet they still were a serious threat to the status quo, to the old way of thinking, because their faith in a greater idea was so clear, so strong, so honest, and so sincere that nothing could stand against it. Nothing could stand against it. In fact, what they believed was so powerful, it kept right on changing the world even after they were taken out of the picture. It just kept going, the power of an idea. Now, how does this apply to us? That's history. Those were big famous people. Well, I think it's pretty obvious. If the ability of these human beings to believe, and they were all human beings just like us, same amount of wisdom, connection to God, all that stuff. If the ability of these enlightened individuals to believe in a greater idea could change the world, then what do you think you and I could do in our own lives if we started to consciously and deliberately use the power of our own belief to change our everyday experience? If they could change the world, what could we do with our life? Okay? Could we use this power to heal ourselves? Could we use this power to create a loving relationship, or maybe to save a relationship? Could we use this power to find work that we love, to find friends, to find all these things that make life worthwhile? And the answer to all these questions would have to be yes, but there's a catch, okay? In order to make our desire a reality, it has to be our own belief and not a wishy-washy belief in somebody else's belief. You get the difference? It has to be our own belief. That's where most of us run into problems. There was a man, a writer, about 100 years ago by the name of Robertson Davies. I had never heard of him, but I love the quote. He once made this brilliant statement. I love this. He says, "Be sure to choose what you believe and why you believe it. Because if you don't choose your beliefs, you may be certain that some belief, and probably not a very good one, will choose you." Will choose you. So, there's a question, all right? How many of your, or mine, okay, current beliefs have you chosen, and how many have chosen you? That's a very good question, okay? Actually, the way we adopt our beliefs, it's kind of like a dating ritual, in a way. It's sort of like a blind date, you know. A belief sort of shows up unexpectedly. We're kind of looking for a belief because we're not sure what we believe. This new belief shows up dressed very nicely, you know, in a very favorable light. And we choose, either consciously or unconsciously, based on how impressed we are with how this belief looks, to either accept it or reject it. That sounds sort of like dating, doesn't it? Kind of, sort of the same thing. If we accept it, It becomes ours until we reject it or change it. In other words, we can't be forced to believe anything. We have to choose what to believe. But there's another catch. Lots of catches here, okay? We always believe in something. We always believe in something. So that means our ability to consciously and personally choose exactly what we want to believe and what we do believe, no matter what the world tries to tell us to believe, that's the key. That is the key that empowers us. It's one of the greatest gifts that we've been given. Because once we make our choice of what to believe, we can rest assured that we have put a power, okay, an infinite power, if you want to call it that, into motion that cannot and will not be stopped unless we choose to stop it ourselves, which unfortunately is what a lot of people do. Now, at this point, a couple of you may be thinking, well, what if the belief somebody has is flat out wrong? Completely wrong, okay? What if somebody believes that the world is flat or believes that they're Jesus Christ or Barbara Streisand or whoever you want to be, you know? Does that mean, are you telling me that their belief is going to become their reality? And the answer to that is a qualified yes. It will become their reality, but it's not going to become the world's reality, okay? Unless, that's the way it goes. Anyway, unless the combined collective wisdom of the world eventually comes to believe it too, which is not very likely. We have to remember that we live in an intelligent universe that functions through certain intelligent scientific and spiritual principles that we call laws, okay? And these laws govern both the invisible idea and the visible manifestation. The invisible idea, wherever it starts, and the visible manifestation, which is the way it shows up in the world. However, even in this intelligent universe, there is still a lot of ignorance and stupidity. All right, Einstein said the two most abundant elements in the world, in the universe, are hydrogen and stupidity. He was right, okay? And both of those can create a lot of confusion for somebody who is trapped under their spell. Because I want to be very clear here, using the power of our belief to create a certain result is not about trying to change the laws of the universe or trying to change the laws of life, because universal laws do not change. They do not change. Instead, this is about changing our understanding of those laws. It's not about pitting ourselves against the truth, whether we're talking about the scientific truth, like how gravity works, or the spiritual truth of our oneness with God, with all of that. It's all about using our faith to place ourselves in harmony with the creative power of God. For example, a belief in lack and limitation does not create poverty in the world at large. It only creates poverty in the life of the person who believes it. In the person who accepts lack and limitation as the truth. Even if somebody believes in poverty and is living a life of poverty, the universe remains abundant. Abundant, okay? Even when millions of people refuse to accept that abundance for themselves. In the same way, your belief that love, not you specifically, but in general, your belief that love only comes to certain people but not to you, only becomes the truth for you. Any other person can still create a wonderful life filled with love regardless of your belief. Now that's on the personal level. On a larger scale, world peace does not yet exist on this planet simply because the vast majority of people in the world do not believe that world peace is easily achieved or maintained. They have no faith in the possibility of world peace. But there is world peace on other worlds, if you think about it. On Mars, total peace, no wars, no nothing, you know? Because the universe only believes in peace, and there is no consciousness on Mars that we know of anyway, stupid enough to create anything else. So as long as the universe is running things without us getting in the way, a person getting in the way, these things can prevail, okay? So maybe all we need to do is to start thinking the way the universe thinks, to start thinking the way God thinks, as Isaac Newton put it. The lesson here is that our belief is very powerful and very creative, but it needs to be disciplined. Disciplined. Why? Let me put it this way. The good news is that whatever we believe will be reflected in our life. That's the good news. The bad news is it will be reflected perfectly, warts and all. Okay? In other words, we don't get just one part of our belief. We get the whole chimichanga, okay? The whole belief, all right? So that means if our belief is tainted by anger or fear or greed, then we will attract the consequences of those negative ideas along with the rest of us, all right? If we believe we can create something like a business, but that we can cheat people and be greedy and judgmental and critical and all that about ourselves or anybody else, that is going to affect the thing that we create, all right? And what we create is going to end up being one of those life lessons. You know what life lessons are, you know, and usually they're not much fun. That's one thing I've found out about them. We all believe in something, okay? We all have a picture of how the world works and a belief in how much power we have. We can't not believe any more than we can not think. As Angela said, we're always making decisions every single moment. We are always believing something every single moment. The only real difference between any of us is that some of us have been able to master the ability to believe in things that support our growth, and some of us haven't. That's really the only difference. Some of us are able to believe that anything we desire in our life is possible for us, while other people spend large amounts of time and energy believing in their own limitations. And as Raymond Charles Barker said, believe in your limitations and they are yours. They are yours. So what we need to do, if we expect to create a world that's better for all of us, is to start consciously and deliberately choosing beliefs that we want to see manifested in our own life. And then, here's something important. Once you get the belief, you need to put passion into it. You need to put passion into it because this is not just an intellectual exercise. If we believe in something with just our head and not our heart, our belief will have direction, but it won't have any power. It won't have any power. It's like art. You know, some of you are artists. You create art without passion, and you end up with a dead painting. True? Some of you? Okay, I see a few out there, all right? That's why we are told in one of the books that to believe in God with our whole heart, our soul, and our mind. Because if we're not excited about what we're creating, then it's probably not going to show up in a very exciting way. All right. We were created so that we ourselves could create. We are both creation and creator. All right. So we have to examine our beliefs, our faith at every level. Do I believe that I am a magnificent spiritual being when I'm meditating? Okay, I can do that. How about when I'm here in church or the center or whatever it happens to be? That's fine. But do I believe that I'm a magnificent spiritual being when I'm around other people? When I'm driving on Georgia 400 on rush hour, okay? Do I believe it when I'm at work? Do I believe it when I'm paying my bills, okay? All those things. What am I thinking while I believe it? Am I sabotaging it? Am I tweaking it? Am I twitching with it? All that. And do I believe that it's true about other people too? That's all part of the equation. All of that is part of our belief. Now, in case you haven't figured it out, these four talks that I've given this month are not about being enlightened. They're about the endless process of becoming enlightened. The process, okay? Because life is a process. Spiritually, we are in process. Rigidly following one path to the end isn't as important as being able to walk our chosen path as we change our choices with a peaceful, loving, and faithful state of mind. Okay? That's what all the great spiritual teachers have done, and that's all they ever told us that we should do. And if we could all learn one day to become, this is what I love, even more enlightened than they were, I don't think it'd bother them a bit. I really, really don't. In fact, I think they would be delighted if we all became more enlightened than them. Because this is not about any one person. It's about God and life and all of us together. And that's the way an enlightened person would look at it. So that's the way we should look at it too. All right? Anyway, I hope you enjoyed these four Sundays and you can go back and put all this stuff together. I had a ball doing them. Thank you for letting me play here. And I just want you to remember, this is the truth in your life. And this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Anyway. All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, let's take a moment. Allow ourselves to be completely present, body, mind, and spirit, all in the same place at the same time, right here in the present moment. Recognizing that we are far more than we appear to be. There is something about us that is more than our body, more than the words we speak, more than the clothes we wear or the money we make. There is something that is not just in us. We are in it. And that is an awareness of God, of spirit, of mind, of this thing that is greater than we are that we can use, that we are an individual expression of. I know that I am, you are, every person is a perfect expression of life here in this place. So I know that I have abilities, I have access to things that have no physical form, but they have great power. I have the ability to be clear about my life and my beliefs, to see beyond what other people see, and to understand that truth for myself. I have the ability to have integrity in my beliefs, in that clarity, to know the truth about the world and the truth about me. I have the ability to identify and connect with other people, to see the God in them and allow them to see the God in me, and to treat them with love, forgiveness, and compassion every day in every way. And I have faith. I have faith that I choose to use. I have the ability to choose my beliefs in order to set the law of cause and effect in motion and choose what my life looks like. These are all things I have. They can never be taken away. No one has more power than me, and no one has power over me. It is my thoughts, my beliefs, the love in my heart, and all these things I have been given that allow me to create the life I desire. So knowing this, I look out into the world, and where I see negativity and fear and anger and violence, I recognize that this is not the truth. I know something better. I live something better. I believe something better. I do not call myself enlightened, but truly that is what I am. Because now the light shines on the truth and it allows me to see. So I give thanks for this awareness. Thanks for this knowing. Thanks for being. Thanks for the love that comes to me and from me, thanks to life itself. This is my truth. I accept it in this moment and every moment, and I release it, letting it do its good and perfect work, now and always. Please join me in saying, and so it is.